for February 21st. And we are having a work session today, the audit of the Department of Education Alternative and Online Education Programs. I'd like to invite up the Secretary of State Audit Division staff. Welcome, and just please introduce yourself for the record.
Committee chairs, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present on our report of the Alt-Ed Education. For the record, my name is Andrew Love. I am the audit manager on this engagement. And with me is Scott Learn, who led the audit work. So I will provide kind of a brief statement on the audit's purpose and results, and then Scott will dive deep into some of the details, focusing on our methodology and some of the results we found.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Before Mr. Love starts, this is just a curiosity for me as a new guy on the committee. You're a pretty regular attendee at these meetings. How many open engagement, audit engagements, do you carry?
At this moment, about 4 and 5. We had a little bit of a turnover, and so I came on a little bit late on some of these engagements. And so for a period, I was the only audit manager with the Secretary of State. We've hired someone new, and her projects are in the pipe right now.
Cool. I was just curious what the typical caseload, if that's the proper nomenclature, is.
Yeah, it's probably about 4 or 5,
okay,
maybe 6 audits, depending on the scope and size of the teams.
Thank you.
We have the same problem we did last time, and we're going to try and get it fixed, but the mics are doing crazy things.
Vibration.
And so we hear you, you know, kind of in a tech voice. So if you could just, I think, keep away from the mic, okay. I think is maybe what's happening.
Okay. Great. So like I was mentioning, I'll give you a brief overview. Scott will dive into the details, and then we'll be happy to take any questions you have. So the purpose of this audit was to determine how the Department of Education and school districts could improve or increase academic success for at-risk youth. We focused our work on alternative ed schools and programs and online schools that serve students that are at risk of either not graduating on time or dropping out of the system altogether. Overall, we found that the department could do more to ensure academic success of these students by identifying all the Alt-Ed programs and online services or online schools out there that serve these type of students, and then doing more public reporting of more detailed performance reports and results of those programs. We also found that they could increase the oversight of school districts that are accountable for these programs, ensuring that they hold these programs accountable for student performance. And finally, Scott will go over more details on this, but we found that other states are doing more to hold their alternative ed programs and online schools accountable. So this time I'll turn it over to Scott and he'll fill you in.
Thanks, Andrew. Good afternoon, co-chairs McLean and Johnson and committee members. For the record, my name is Scott Learn, and I thank you for your interest in this audit. It focuses on schools and programs that serve some of the most vulnerable students in our education system, students at risk of dropping out of high school. And we think improved oversight of these schools from the state and from districts will help more students graduate and earn their GEDs. I want to detail our audit focus, then outline our methodology, then summarize our findings and highlight some key recommendations. Based on your questions during the graduation rate audit discussion last week, I've added more information to the presentation, particularly on our methodology. So just cut me off if you think I'm going too deep on that. I hope to be done in 15 minutes. So let me start with our audit focus. We focused on academically at-risk high school students in alternative and online education. The term academically at-risk was our shorthand for students at risk of not graduating or dropping out. I just want to say that alternative education includes both schools and programs. This is kind of a nuance. Unlike alternative schools, the programs do not have separate public report cards, and they're typically offered by districts or private nonprofits or education service districts.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just so I can follow the rest of your remarks, when you said at risk for dropping out, does that make the assumption that this cohort is already in an alternative school, or how are the decisions made? Are there objective indices that say little Johnny is has failed all of his classes, has a spotty attendance rate. What are the indices that mark an at-risk student in the language that you're using for this audit?
Co-Chair Johnson, committee members, that's a good question. And basically, the indice is dropouts at the schools, because there's not, we're not tracking as a state, we're not tracking credits earned or, you know, the status beyond the freshman on track data point. We're not tracking credits earned. So kind of our best indicator as auditors for where a lot of these at-risk students were going was the dropout rate and the number of dropouts from various schools.
And again, just for definitional clarity, dropout means that they've had a lack of attendance for some finite period of time, you know, 5 weeks, 5 days.
Yeah, 2 weeks, I think, is the period where the schools can no longer get funded for those students. ODE might be able to define that better, but I believe that that's when they're considered.
ODE is in the audience behind you. I would very much like to know that and what guidance ODE typically gives to school districts as you're coming up on the last day of that allowable period of time. Are alarm bells going off? Is somebody acting worried? Does somebody engage? And what I really don't want to hear is we don't have enough counselors, we don't have enough people. I'm interested in knowing what triggers anybody to act anxious about the fact that little Freddie hasn't been there for a consistent period of time.
And I do think ODE will be able to help fill in a little bit of that, but could please have a chance to answer that if you will, and then we have one more question, and then we'll try not to interrupt for a while.
Okay. Co-Chair McLean, committee members, I don't want to give the answer you don't want, but what we heard at the schools is they are tracking these kids, and sometimes they don't have quite the capacity to really get in touch with them, and sometimes they do that buried.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick, before I hear everything, because I'd like to be sure I get this clarified. I'm sure, is the Oregon Youth Challenge statistics, I'm sure you didn't visit them, but are their statistics part of this, part of your statistics?
Representative Wisnett, committee members, Oregon Youth Challenge, and is that Ben Lapine School District?
It comes on, they certify them, but yeah. That's the National Guard's program for dropouts.
Yes, sir. That is an alternative program. So it doesn't have a separate report card. It comes in under the district statistics.
It's not under your audit.
It's in this audit. So their numbers are folded into the programs in this audit.
Because their statistics, everyone knows, is like they graduate 130 out of 150.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Thank you. So to Senator Johnson's point, we did look at dropouts to kind of identify where a lot of the at-risk students were going. So for the 2015-16 school year, students in alternative schools and programs and online schools accounted for nearly half the state's dropouts, though they enrolled only 10% of Oregon's public high school students. We concluded that improving results in alternative and online education is an important part of the state's effort to reduce dropout rates and increase graduation rates. Wanted to provide three important points of context to that. Number one, the graduation rate audit that you discussed last week focused on traditional high schools. ODE enrollment data indicates many academically at-risk students likely enroll in alternative and online education after they have already fallen behind in these traditional schools. Number two, online schools are growing fast. Their enrollment rose 93% from 2012 to 2016. That compared to 3% enrollment growth statewide. Alternative school and program enrollment fell in that period, but it remains considerably larger than the online school enrollment. And last context point, alternative education schools and programs and online schools in particular also serve students who are not academically at risk. And we did not focus on their effectiveness with those students. This audit was focused on students who are academically at risk in these programs. Last week, you all had a fair number of questions on audit methodology, so I beefed up this section quite a bit. And again, give me the high sign if I'm getting too detailed. So as always, we spoke with multiple education stakeholders and ODE personnel. We also visited schools. We visited 9 alternative schools and programs and 2 online schools that have a physical location for student instruction. We also conducted interviews with personnel at five other online schools. We chose these schools and programs for a variety of geography, a variety of education approaches, and a variety of performance on traditional outcome measures. Hi, Senator Cordy. We're just going through our methodology on this alternative and online
school. I don't understand it, so don't even bother.
So I wanted to list the alternative schools and programs we visited. So Albany Options, Alliance High School in Portland, Barbara Roberts High School in Salem, Community High School in Beaverton, the Columbia County Education Campus in the St. Helens School District, Destinations Academy in Coos Bay, Rosemary Anderson High School in Portland, Watonga High School in the Dalles, and Woodburn Success Alternative High School. For online schools, we visited the Metro East Web Academy in Gresham and the Hillsboro Online Academy, and we spoke with personnel from Baker Web Academy, Insight School of Oregon, Painted Hills, Oregon Connections Academy, Oregon Virtual Academy, and the Winter Lake School in the Coquille School District. Another point in our methodology, we spoke with district officials for every school we visited or interviewed, and we asked all 197 Oregon school districts to fill out an online survey. We also sent a more specific survey to 40 districts of particular interest for online and alternative education. And the surveys, those surveys, what they did is they gave us a better sense of the numbers of online and alternative schools and programs, and they helped us evaluate district oversight of their performance. So in the end, we identified 33 standalone alternative schools in Oregon, more than 100 alternative programs, and 20 online or virtual schools that offer all or most of their courses online, and that included both charter and non-charter. For each school we visited or spoke with, we reviewed a lot of documents, school improvement plans, district annual reviews, accreditation reviews, charter contracts, et cetera. We also analyzed alternative and online school accountability in 9 states with more accountability than Oregon. And those 9 states were Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Florida, Indiana, Maine, Minnesota, Oklahoma, and Washington. We focused on states that were recommended in best practice literature and appeared to have improved school practices or student performance. And lastly, on our methodology, we reviewed performance research and best practice recommendations from a variety of sources. For alternative schools and programs, 3 key sources included, just to pick out 3, the National Alternative Education Association and the National Dropout Prevention Center, the Everyone Graduate Center at Johns Hopkins University, and the Consortium of Chicago School Research. For online schools, 3 key research sources were Stanford University's Center for Research on Education Outcomes, which found online charter school students lagging behind, particularly in math, University of Washington's Center on Reinventing Public Education, and the National Association of Charter School Authorizers. That's our methodology. Any questions on that?
Any questions on the methodology? Yes, please, Senator.
There is, I'm not just saying this to pander to Senator Courtney, although it appears I might be doing that. There is a wonderful career technical school inside the Salem-Keizer School District. I visited it. I brought some European friends to visit it. It got high marks all the way around. That doesn't count as an alternative high school, does it? I mean, those are taking kids that want to pursue career technical. They're not dropouts. At least in my observation, how is that school characterized?
Senator Johnson, committee members, that is not classified as an alternative high school. One of our findings was that Oregon needs a better definition of what alternative really means. So there are schools that provide CTE services and other things that might list themselves as an alternative school.
That's where my confusion rests.
It's a legitimate confusion.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, please proceed.
Okay, so on to findings and recommendations. I'll try to get through these fast, but it's a little long. Overall, we found that the Oregon Department of Education is not focused on improving education for at-risk high school students in alternative and online schools and programs. The department has 468 departmental positions, and it has a half-time specialist assigned to alternative education and 2 staff assigned to charter schools, both online and brick and mortar. So specifically, we have 3 findings. Our first finding, ODE does not accurately track alternative education schools and programs or reports some meaningful performance information. 3 points on that. We found ODE's lists do not include some alternative schools and programs. The agency does not identify alternative schools as alternative in its performance reporting, and it does not report the performance of any alternative programs, instead folding their totals into overall district results. That limited information makes evaluation of the school and program's progress or lack of progress more difficult. Mm-hmm. The agency has also not collected data that would help track student progress and help identify successful and underperforming alternative schools and programs. This finding applies to online schools as well. Mm-hmm. The student progress data could include credits attained, attendance improvement, and student academic growth, which other states have tracked. I just want to say this is a constant between the graduation rate and this audit, mm-hmm. is that we think tracking credits that students earned would help us keep a lot better tab mm-hmm. on where they're at and what's working and what's not.
May I ask a question about that?
Please.
So you were here, I think, for the longitudinal data presentation, and you're talking about information that we could garnish from that program?
Co-Chair McLean, members of the committee, I am not sure on that.
Okay.
We can get back down that.
I know that there's a blind, we know who they are, but it's a blind for protection and privacy. But I wondered if there was an off track off of that. Maybe OD can tell us a little more. Thank you.
So our second finding, and this is also to do with alternative education. State monitoring and support of alternative school and program quality is minimal, and district oversight is inconsistent. So ODE does not review district annual evaluations of alternative schools and programs, which are required by statute. And that's a problem, since our review found some districts did not conduct annual evaluations at all or conducted shallow evaluations. ODE also does not ensure the districts are making sure schools follow recommended practices. At the schools we visited, the depth of their assessments of student progress varied widely, as did their use of performance data for student improvement. Most did not regularly survey students about their connection with adults at the school, despite research indicating that strong adult-student relationships are critical to student engagement. We also saw significant differences in the support services provided to students, such as counseling and behavioral health care. One of the most common themes we heard in our school visits was a need for more behavioral health care, and this was another constant with the graduation rate audit. They heard this almost universally at every high school they visited as well. So results in other states indicate more state involvement in alternative education could help improve Oregon's system. Some states have held district schools and programs to higher standards and provided more support to help students succeed. And that includes states such as Colorado that, like Oregon, place a high value on local control of education. The other state practices include requiring and publicly disclosing school improvement plans, setting standards and goals for alternative education, visiting the schools and programs, monitoring the program quality, and providing extra funding to help schools implement recommended practices. And some of the other states reviewed, legislators passed specific laws that created focused alternative school oversight and performance reporting. Oregon's legislature has not done so. So our third and final finding relates to online schools. And we concluded that stronger oversight, support, and attendance requirements at online schools could better serve academically at-risk students. Again, this is limited to academically at-risk students. For online schools, we also, similar to alternative schools, found that more state involvement, more consistent district oversight could help the schools improve results with academically at-risk students. Online schools, both charters and district run, they've added academic coaches and family specialists to try to help serve at-risk students, but they also continue to have large teacher loads and relatively little synchronous instruction time where students and teachers are participating in instruction together. And that's a challenge for students already disconnected from school. As with alternative schools, Oregon's monitoring of district oversight of online schools is minimal, and the district's oversight of the schools varied widely. We found the quality of the school's annual performance reports and improvement plans varied substantially, ranging from a two-page document at one school we reviewed to in-depth outside evaluations. Performance requirements and charter agreements also vary substantially, and most districts do not limit growth if school performance is low. Another issue is that ODE's online attendance standard, requiring students to check in with teachers only twice a week, raises the risk that online schools could receive taxpayer dollars even if students spend little time engaged with school and make no progress academically. The standard also determines state funding. Other states tie online attendance and funding to course completion or credit accumulation, and that rewards student engagement. Finally, final point on online. Oregon has three statewide virtual charters that contract with for-profit firms for curriculum and technical support. They're all sponsored by relatively small school districts. We found the level of district monitoring is low for two of the three schools, and the charter agreements with those two schools have few performance provisions. Other states have overseen online schools more closely, particularly online schools that serve students statewide or from multiple districts. Approaches taken in other states include improving online curriculum, increasing oversight of low-performing online schools, and moving to central sponsorship of statewide or regional online charter schools. On recommendations, very briefly, we recommended that ODE develop a more meaningful accountability system for alternative and online education, and that ODE establish and monitor standards for district evaluation of these schools, and strengthen the attendance and funding standard for online schools. We also recommended that ODE work with the legislature to upgrade accountability and oversight for alternative education and online schools. In closing, I want to note that ODE personnel at all levels were upfront about the agency's problems and challenges. We also appreciated the depth of their response to our recommendations. Thank you again for your interest. Happy to hear your observations or questions.
I tried to muzzle myself during the presentation, so I've got four pretty significant questions. The first one is, and I'm glad you concluded by saying that you appreciated the department's willingness to acknowledge some of your criticisms in the audit. But when I hear things like poor definitions, don't evaluate, don't track info, don't follow best practices, no meaningful surveys, disparate support services, lack of standards, episodic quality review, that's pretty devastating. And one of the questions that I have is, did you get any sense of bias towards these alternative schools or the fact that the agency had just given up on these kids? The things you're talking about are pretty significant.
Co-Chair Johnson, committee members, I think the primary, there's a number of causes. I think the primary one is that ODE is very wary of treading on local control without somebody like the audits division, or to better yet, the legislature saying that they should do so.
Okay, that's.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
The question that I would have for you, because I spent in 2015 a lot of hours, in 2016 as well, going through the different codes and statutes that we have for online and alternative types of schools, and I agree with you, the definition on alternative is very vague, but it was very different than our public schools. There was different responsibilities. We had, you know, our statutes for our public schools, we have standards, and it gives a base for what you have to do to get, you know, your report card. But then on the other side, on online and on alternative, it says you have to have a plan. So I wondered, I didn't find it in here, and actually this is one audit that I've really worked through mm-hmm. quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find anything there in your methodology, nor did I hear you say today that you looked at the difference in the statutes between what the responsibilities were for public schools and what the responsibilities were for online or alternative schools. And again, the contract is part of that because you're contracting most of the time, right, with a public district. So did you take into consideration in any way, shape, or form what supposedly are the requirements for those types of schools?
Co-Chair McClain, committee members, the main requirement, and I'd love to hear talk to you more about this, but the main requirement that we saw for alternative schools was a requirement that the districts evaluate them annually. And with charter schools, there's a lot of requirements about evaluation as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of the online schools that are not charters are considered alternative schools, so they hit that district evaluation. That was the main requirement okay. that we saw in statutes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Senator Johnson.
The next question that I want to make sure I understood you, because if I understood you correctly, this is devastating, that there is a methodology to trigger the flow of money, but the kid seems to be sort of incidental to that. I'm trying to figure out if we're not tracking, not evaluating, not providing all of this support, but we've figured out a way to keep the money turned on. it puts the lie to the conversation that we have in this building over and over again about how we're all here for kids' success and we all want kids to succeed. If it's just, if the trigger is so obvious to keep the money turned on and we don't do any of the rest of the tracking and evaluation, what conclusions did you draw from that?
Co-Chair Johnson, committee members, the co-chair is referring to the standard of students checking in twice a week mm-hmm. with teachers in order to be considered as attending the entire week, which also determines funding. Because as you know, the payments to schools are based on attendance. We thought that was not adequate, particularly when it came to at-risk students. But we also found, when we talked to the online schools, that they didn't think it was adequate either. And they were up for discussing an improvement in that. with ODE, they just wanted to collaborate. They didn't want somebody to just, you know, come down and tell them something specific. They wanted to work on it because they would love, I think, a standard that said, yeah, we need to make progress with these students in order to receive payment. Because it would show, that standard would show which schools are making progress with students. And I think a lot of those schools are confident that they're doing that.
I'd like to respectfully flag for the professional staff that seems to me to be an assignment. If everybody is waiting for somebody else to be collaborative, we're at a stalemate. And I would like this committee to have, as something reported back, at least the overture of collaboration. And I would submit that having the agency reach out to the school districts and invite the discussion would be a starting place.
We have Senator Thatcher and then Senator and President Courtney.
Thank you. There's a part of the audit where they talk about, or you talk about, how many students came in to online schools credit deficient, yet were able to graduate on time. Did you delve in a little deeper as to what created this turnaround in this subset of students?
Co-Chair Senator Thatcher, no. You know, I think that some of the online schools are pursuing, this is a problem that I think caught some of them a little unawares, and now they're starting to ramp up their intervention with at-risk students. And I think the ones that have done that sooner rather than later are seeing better results. So that was encouraging to see if they had, sometimes they'll have a small group of people who kind of focus on at-risk students and try to connect with their family members. That's one strategy, or sometimes they'll try to set up in-person meetings with the students and their families. So those seem like promising strategies. And it's too anecdotal, I guess, to answer your question with any precision.
Well, I guess follow up to that, would it be useful data to have?
Co-Chairs, Senator Thatcher, absolutely.
Senator?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Co-Chair McLean. So if you said this and I missed it, please forgive my what would be a poor question. There's a committee called the Committee on Student Success, a joint committee that's been created in the last several weeks. Are you familiar with that committee?
Co-Chairs, Senator Courtney, yes, sir.
Do you plan to testify before that committee in the way you just testified before this committee?
Co-Chair Senator Courtney, I would love to.
So is that your signal to me that you can't just walk in there, you got to get an invitation? No, really, this is not my intention to show off or to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to figure out if there's a protocol thing. Something. Just let me know what it is, please.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, traditionally we generally wait to get an invitation on a committee to do a full presentation instead of going to public testimony. I think we are, as an office, is open to any kind of invitation to do so, and we'd be looking to be more proactive on that. So we would love an invitation to speak on this topic and any other topic that any other committee wants us to speak on.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm trying to get my hands around the numbers and what we're talking about here, because we're only talking about high school students. And I know the total student count in Oregon is like 550 or 60,000 students. What are we talking about here as the total number of students? I also was under the assumption I was always told that these kind of types of schools don't take their fair share of disadvantaged or children with disabilities or special needs. Your data, even though 41% versus 48% of economic disadvantage doesn't seem, you know, that far apart. And then you say they also have a lower portion of students with disabilities and students from historically underserved races and ethnic backgrounds. So whatever the number we're talking about, and our, I don't have the breakdown, the department maybe can say the total number of students in high school and versus how many are in regular school and how many are then alternate online.
Co-chairs, Representative Wendt, I'm trying to do some quick math
because
it's in here. It's, so these schools in total have about 20,000 kids, and they account for about 10% of total high school enrollment. So I think that works out to about 200,000
high schools. 10%. Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Thank you for that information, and that gives you sort of a ballpark. When I first came in the building many years ago, TAG had one half FTE, and I thought that was ridiculous. So I also think the one half FTE seems unrealistic for the department to be monitoring and improving this program. But I saw that they do want to come in and ask for more FTEs. But, you know, this student body's parents have already paid, you know, they're paying their taxes and everything too for the department's budget. So I don't know how, what the numbers are going to look like, but I don't think one half FTE is going to manage or improve these programs. I understand the department will come in for more money, but always more money doesn't solve the problem. It is attention to. Thank you for your testimony.
Any other questions or comments? And were you at the end of the recommendations? Okay. I wanted to compliment you on your report simply because as I was reading them, this one to me was laid out in a way that it had a lot of not just plain data, but it also had a lot of what I would call appendix that were helpful. And it also had information where there were some comparisons about the alternative schools that you were covering. And I think it covered 60% of the bill that I was trying to get passed last time. Maybe more than that, but I think it was about 60%. And so there were some really good questions that I had wanted answers to that I actually found some answers to. I also thought the section in here on the other states was really well summarized because we had, you know, we really had the key points or the themes or, you know, some of the requirements. And that part gave me some ideas. And we had done some research in my office as well on these areas, and I saw some comparable things from the notes that we had. So I wanted to compliment you on that, and I'm hoping that they will be helpful to the department and hope that the department can use them in some ways to maybe start some of their own research and some follow-up on this. But thank you very much. And please, Senator Thatcher.
Sorry to interrupt. You kind of triggered another question. I'm sorry. In comparing these other states and looking at their online school programs and best practices, were there comparisons showing that these best practices created a better outcome for these credit deficient students specifically? I didn't see that.
Co-Chair Senator Thatcher, no. A lot of this is relatively new, that there's been additional oversight. So you'll see other states taking some steps like really focusing on in a lot more detail on school improvement, on, you know, having schools adopt practices that will help students improve their performance, or for particularly consistently low performing online schools for a long, you know, fairly long period of time, kind of shutting those down. Most of the interventions that the states have done haven't been in place long enough to demonstrate great, you know, any great statistically reliable increase in performance.
Okay. Any follow-ups there?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, then, we're going to go ahead and invite the department up. Welcome. Yeah.
Good afternoon. My name is Cindy Hunt. I am the Acting Chief of Staff for the Department of Ed. Deputy Superintendent Gill sends his regards. He had a pre-planned visit to our Southern Oregon schools today, so he couldn't make it today. So, So what some of your questions and comments have highlighted is the tension that's within this audit between state standards, state minimums, and local control in Oregon. And there's no other place probably in Oregon's education system where that tension exists as much as in our alternative education programs and our charter schools. And both of those types of programs are the subject of this audit. So the first thing I wanted to talk about that I think could help to clarify some of your questions is this audit actually covers three types of school programs. So there are alternative education programs in Oregon, and those programs can be public or private. Both of those are operated under school districts. A private alternative education program has a contract with the school district to operate. A public alternative ed program is created by a school district. In both of those instances, a school district places a student in those programs if they feel that that student can benefit from those programs. Then there is also charter schools. This audit covered virtual charter schools specifically, which are a subset of our charter schools. And you heard Secretary of State talk about those three statewide virtual charter schools. There's, I think, between 12 to 15 virtual charter schools in Oregon today. Not all of them are necessarily statewide, though. And so those operate under our charter school laws. A charter school is by choice of the parent, whether or not the student goes there. The school district does not have a say in that. So there's a different standard, if you will, for when a student gets to go to a charter school. And then the third type of school that was also kind of captured in the audit that's a little harder, that I think one of Senator Johnson's questions alluded to when she was asking about the CTE program in Salem-Keizer, is we also have schools that are contained within our, if you will, traditional school structure, who call themselves alternative for some reason, right? Because they're serving perhaps an at-risk population, or they're alternative to the more traditional school setting that we have. And I think that's where that CTE program in Salem-Keizer fits into, that niche. So when the Secretary of State's audit made the recommendation to do a definition of alternative schools, what they, I believe, were talking about is a definition that would be an umbrella over these different types of programs and schools that I just highlighted. And then we would use that definition for purposes of data reporting, tracking, et cetera.
I just wanted to say, to me, the updated term is focus programs. The CTE are focus programs. They're not alternative programs.
Right.
And there's some very difference. There's focus programs, and then the other two I agree with. But yeah. I think we have to be careful of putting those focus programs into this alternative. And that's why you said it wasn't a school that met that alternative definition.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair McLean, for that comment. And one of the things also that's highlighted in these schools, using an example of one of the big virtual charter schools, yes, they have at-risk kids who are credit deficient who attend the schools, but there are also other kids who attend the schools who we would not necessarily consider at-risk or credit deficient. And so these schools within them can have very diverse student populations as well, and that's something to kind of understand about this as well. So a couple of the questions that came up, there was a question about when a student is considered chronically absent or a dropout, something to that effect. So a student who doesn't attend school for 10 days in a row in Oregon is considered to no longer be attending school, okay? They might be, though, in, you know, a homeschool setting, for example. They might decided to go to a private school, those kinds of opportunities. So, but we also look at not just 10 days in a row when we determine whether or not a student is chronically absent, but the number of days overall within a school year, because that also is an indicator that a student may not be on track to complete their educational program or graduate. You also asked about some of the programs that address, you know, students who are at risk or chronically absent and that kind of thing. Deputy Superintendent Gill went over some of those at the last meeting that we were here, but I'm going to highlight a couple. The legislature appropriated to the department a little over $7 million last session for our chronic absenteeism work. And so that's one program that's really focusing on students in that category I'm just referring to. Also, Measure 98, one of the three pillars of 98, if you will, is dropout prevention. And so all of our districts right now are creating plans around Measure 98 that also include dropout prevention as part of this. The districts are also including within that alternative education programs. And charter schools who are high schools also qualified for that money, including these virtual charter schools that have been referenced here today. Let's see. There was also a question about the money. And we, I want to say from the beginning, we agreed with all of the Secretary of State's recommendations. But when I talked about this tension between local control and state control, I want to talk about the money a bit. So before a charter school can receive state school funds, it must report in on how many students it has in attendance. And you heard the reference to the checking in with the virtual charter schools. So that's one way that it's determined that those kids are attending school and that they get money. But there's also annual visits and evaluations that the local school district does, that I wanted to also highlight, because in charter schools in Oregon, there's a lot of reliance on that local sponsor of the charter school for holding that charter school accountable. And in saying that, we do have examples of school districts in Oregon who have shut down charter schools because they felt like they were not meeting those standards for receiving money. And so in that way, it worked. I mean,
yeah. Can I, since you paused.
Yeah.
One of the things that I noticed in the, you know, in the report was basically how different each school district that has a contract with a charter school or an online virtual school, how different, or how some are maybe more developed than others. Some have nothing. And I think the quote was 2 pages to a reasonable outside third party evaluation. And so, I mean, I know for a fact, because I looked in 2015 and 2016 at the contracts with these online virtual schools and some other alternative schools with the school district. There were, I guess I would say, a boilerplate, but there also were very different rules and regulations that were, as you point out, probably local decisions made on how they were going to have a relationship with these alternative schools or online virtual schools. But the point of this report to me was they are so different, and some may be thorough and some may not have walkthroughs. Some may not have reports. Sometimes they only talk twice a year or once every other year when they're getting their contract re-upped. And so I guess I would kind of like some response, mm-hmm. because you said you agreed with their recommendations.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So where are we going with how do we get a standard for how they review, or a standard on what they do that still allows, like we do in our public schools, for local control?
Yeah.
How do we do that?
Yeah. Chair McLean, yes, I did say that we agreed with their recommendations. And, you know, one of those was around a heightened standard for reporting whether or not a student attends. You asked how. We've already started to form the stakeholder group, and that includes virtual schools, as well as others, for how to do that. And what we would anticipate coming out of that work is recommendations for something we call the accounting manual that school districts must follow when they report in money. So the how is that. And following, because in my experience with working with many of the virtual charter schools, they also want high standards because they want to be able to say, we're doing what we promised why you're giving us the money. And so, and they don't want necessarily bad actors in the mix, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why, as we've been reaching out to the virtual charter schools, they've been very eager to work with us on that. And, so we anticipate a collaborative process. But your question was, if I heard you correctly, is that, in Oregon, we do have these standards for virtual schools that aren't as, they're different. They're different than other school districts. And, and in regards to how do we go about strengthening those standards, those are in state statute. And so that would require probably legislation. I mean, I know you know this because we've talked a lot in the last couple of years.
For at least 3 years.
But, and like I said, that is one of the policy decisions that the state of Oregon has made, is that charter schools and alternative programs get, for in exchange for more flexibility, they get to meet less laws. And so when I talked about that tension between state level standards and local control, I mean, that's what I was referring to as far as, this is where it's highlighted. What I do want to say is we did think that this was the right group of students to be focusing on for an audit, because you heard some of the information about many of these students are at risk of not graduating, and many of these students are credit deficient when they enroll into a virtual charter school or are placed in an alternative education program. So this is a good, we were happy that they were focusing on this group of students. Like I said, we agreed with the recommendations, and we've started to implement many of the recommendations. What you also heard the Secretary of State's Audit Division talk about is potential legislation. That legislation would not be coming forward till 2019. One of the things that we have been doing since we received the audit in December, though, is analyzing it so that the first thing we didn't do is come in front of you all with our handout, to be honest. So as we were looking at alternative education programs, I'll give you an example. It is true that we have a 0.5 FTE on alternative education programs. However, under the new ESSA law, the federal educational law that we're implementing, as of this fall, we will be naming schools for improvement if they had 67% or less in their graduation rates. In some of our initial reviews, it's expected that many of those schools will likely meet this definition of alternative program. And we anticipate that some of our virtual charter schools will be in that mix. So our school improvement team, who works with our federal programs, their attention will be on some of these alternative programs. So that's an example of us using existing staff to support alternative programs. So when we say that 0.5 FTE, it's bigger than that, but I don't want to mislead you. Those staff are also focused on other schools as well for school improvement. We are also, like I said, looking at, you know, how much can we do without a change in the statute or without additional funds and those kinds of things. So the definition of alternative education programs, we are, you know, well on track to have that created. I already talked about convening stakeholder groups to talk about standards. We also are looking at part of what Secretary of State talked about is data on, you know, whether or not a student is credit deficient, and I heard you ask if the SLDS system would give us that data. So one of the things, and actually I think it was in the high school graduation audit that we responded to this on, and not this one, but while it's possible that we could have credit information at the state level, it is a couple of years old when we get it. And what I mean by that is a school district today reporting to us about the credits that a student received. When we roll that up into data systems like SLDS, that will be like next year. And so for the student who's a ninth grader today, to the folks who need to know that they're credit deficient are at the local level, and local school districts have that data. It's not necessarily, even if SLDS has that data, it will report it across the system. So it would report, for example, generally if a student is credit deficient in ninth grade, they are less likely to graduate, and then we can make policy determinations based on that. But if we're looking to help an individual student, that's the kind of data that comes at the local level so that they can immediately address that student's needs.
Well, and I understand that. I mean, I was on teams of teachers that worked with kids at the ninth grade level that basically had, you know, early indications that they were having problems and they were deficient of credits. Mm-hmm. So I think they're two different pieces of the system for sure. But I think there's a place for both the local and the state collection of that so that we can look at trends and look mm-hmm. at schools, and it could be part of a report card element, or it could be part of legislation for standards going up for some of these schools. But I understand what you just said.
Yeah. So in conclusion, so one of the things that we're doing is we're reviewing the impact of developing increased standards for districts on alternative ed programs and for online schools. And then based on that work, that is work that would then potentially net us a legislative concept in 2019 with the potential for an ask for FTE. So that's where we're at. We're just right in the middle of our budget development process, you know, leading into 2019. So in that way, the audit was really good timing for us as we plan out for the next biennium.
Senator Johnson.
I guess my question would be, rather than come in with a request for FTE, can you make any suggestions of things where you could do an internal reduction of FTE? Rarely do agencies come in and say, gee, we think we can declare success in this place and repurpose the employees. It's always, give us what you've given us now and give us some more.
Mm-hmm. Senator Johnson, Co-Chair McLean, as part of our budget development process, we always look at existing positions and can those be repurposed to, you know, meet changing needs of our education system. And I know that last biennium, for example, we did reduce some FTE as part of our, you know, budget recommendation to the legislature.
As you read through this this audit, one of the other items to Senator Johnson's idea is when I was looking at the education budget last year, I was trying to figure out, you know, what were the programs you were asking to keep or add or drop, you know, what would be your drop for a budget that was going to have to be lower. And one of the things that I went through is try to go through and integrate, and I used CTE as an example, where you have a number of different, you know, CTE programs, and trying to see what was going on with the FTE for the integration of some of that work, so there wouldn't be different people in different parts of the department working on the same thing. So integration of FTE, integration of programs, and I really like the repurpose idea. If we're going to have more in the way of alternative schools and more in the way of focus schools and more in the way of, you know, some of these online, again, I think we have to look at, you know, doing our work differently to match up with some of the different elements of the system that we haven't faced before. But I am real curious and real excited if in that budget process you can look at, especially in response to this audit, that you can look at what we need in the way of the standards fitting the needs of some of these schools and some of the concerns that we have for their students and their graduation.
Yeah. Co-Chair McLean, thank you for that comment. One of the things that we've done with our charter school unit within our agency, it's correct that we have two FTE assigned to charter schools, but we've also formed an interagency team, and some of the people on that team, they do things like school accountability, for example. Charter schools are not their complete body of work, but we've asked them, repurposed them a proportion of their, you know, their PD to focus on charter school accountability, for example. So that's an example of one step we've taken relating to charter schools.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I know we all have other committees and everything, and I want to make sure our staff gets a chance to give our recommendations. Are there any other questions for the department? And is there anything else the department wanted to share?
Nope. Okay.
All right, at this time then I'll turn to our LFO staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the analysis and recommendation from LFO, overall the topic and scope of this audit we found would be very timely and in line with the needs of the agency and really ultimately the legislature going forward, both because of the nature of the topics and the fact that this continues to be a growing area in education models. We do point out, and we heard it several times here today, that for both the policy and the resource discussions that are likely to need to occur as we look at, as the agency looks at, and then the legislature implementing recommendations, understanding and working with the governance structure that exists in Oregon will be one of the primary issues that needs to be addressed and is different from what you might find in some other states. So that will be a key element. We agree the additional definitions and clarity should really assist future policy discussions and is really one of the first things that needs to be done to find that that is on track to be done. In terms of performance monitoring and performance data reporting, again, very challenging area, and believe that a lot of things need to be looked at when that gets done, and it probably is an area around performance reporting that will need to continuously be monitored because the change in schools and in models and in the needs of the students will vary over time, so that may be an ongoing issue. Should point out that ODE was not found to be in non-compliance with any current laws or legislative direction regarding alternative education, but again, in terms of future focus, a lot of recommendations, and again, the agency agrees. So finally, I think we come down to a couple of final things, which is It does appear that there's some detailed data collected and used by the Secretary of State in this audit that we hope would be shared with the agency for their purposes and the legislature's going forward. And finally, again, when it comes to the need for additional funding, staffing, or fundamental policy changes, those will need to be discussed with the appropriate policy and budget committees of the legislature. We recommend that the committee acknowledge receipt of the audit report with such direction.
Could I have a motion to that so we can have discussion if there is any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'd move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Okay, then we have accepted those as written and presented. So any other comments or things for the good of the order before we go to staff on our next meeting agenda? Okay, please.
Madam Chair, the next item that we're hoping to hear at this committee is the audit that was conducted on the child welfare program. We are in process of reviewing that audit. If it can be completed in time, we would expect to hear that on Monday, February 26th. It may have to be February 28th just because of timing issues of getting that done. So stand by. And
all right. That sounds really good. I also wanted to say when President Courtney was talking about the larger education committee, I think it's important, again, that we're trying to integrate some of the work that we're doing in this committee and send it to the committee that's supposed to be working on an overall look at how to improve education and how to really make sure we've got the right resources in the right places for our educational system, basically pre-kindergarten all the way through our community college level, really, that P to 20. And I really think it's important for us to try and relate our work in all of our committees to try and work for a successful report out from that committee. So any of the work that we can do and comments that we can send, I think it's really valuable. So thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, and we will adjourn the audit committee for today.
I thought I talked to you.